Ready to go, Tamar?
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to the Sierra Room of the Carson City Community Center. It's 6 o'clock in the evening on Wednesday, July 20th. That's all correct. 2016, and this is a meeting of the Carson City Airport Authority. And
I think I made a statement saying that there was a loss in revenue of $3,200 once those airplanes were moved to the Northwest apron.
Okay, any other clarifications or amendments? So hearing none, we'd need a motion to approve those minutes as clarified by Manager Rowe.
I would move to adopt the minutes of May 31st as clarified.
We've got a motion by Member Law, second by Member Shirk. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, approval of the May 31st minutes carries unanimously. Moving to the June 15 minutes, are there any clarifications or corrections proposed? Hearing none, I need a motion to approve the June 15 minutes.
Okay, so moved again.
Okay, motion by Member Posick, second by Member Shirk. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, the minutes of the June 15 meeting are unanimously approved. Thank you for that. A note before we get to item D, modification of the agenda, I would just note that in a very rare occurrence, Council Takis is absent tonight. It only happens every so often, but he is, I believe, in San Francisco on a court matter. So I mention that here as we lead into modification of the agenda for a reason. So the chairman reserves the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. Items may be taken out of order, combined for consideration by the authority, or pulled or removed from the agenda at any time. With that in mind, I've made a decision to remove item number 4 from tonight's agenda, that is the for possible action to approve the selection of a subcommittee to review and evaluate controllable budget items, including legal fees, advertising costs, and other administrative expenses, and to make recommendations to the Airport Authority at the August 17th meeting. I think that advice from Council, came to understand that creating a subcommittee has certain open meeting law requirements and complexity associated with that. Certainly wouldn't want to move forward with that without Council take us here to consult, and I think we may have a more effective way to address the item. So we'll be removing that from tonight's agenda, item 4. Otherwise, we will take the agenda items in the order published in the published agenda. Brings us to item E, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority may speak on agendized or non-agendized matters related to the airport. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes per person or topic, and if your item requires extended discussion, you can request that I calendar the matter for a future Airport Authority meeting. Do we have public comment at this time? We do. And if you would, you know the drill, sign in on the login and state your name for the record before you begin.
I am Michael Greedy. I have an aircraft at Carson City Airport. I want to call 2 items to your attention. 1, let's get the speed bumps removed. We discussed that months ago. And secondly, you may be aware of this, but the FAA published a
of the amendment of Carson City Municipal Code sections 19.02.020.340 and 19.02.020.200. There we go. To incorporate Carson City Building Department counter permit procedures into the Airport Authority construction approval process, and to correct the reference to the landing pattern diagrams to refer to the authority web page, respectively. And Tim can speak to this item, but I think we'll all recall that we had I believe the correct term is approved language around this in concept previously and had held off on making this motion to or considering this action to forward this to the Carson City supervisors for their consideration and acceptance until I think we kind of had a critical mass of changes to be made, and I think that was the two things we're looking at tonight. There had potentially maybe been some other business, but I think we have everything now that we would like to consider moving forward. So, Mr. Rowe?
Again, the authority will consider approval of two changes to the Carson City Municipal Code, Title 19. The first allows the use of the city's over-the-counter permit criteria for construction on the airport. The second corrects the code to direct users to the authority's webpage for an improved traffic pattern diagram instead of referring users to a chart that does not appear in the official version. The old chart in Title 19 of the airport traffic pattern has been removed completely, and we have opted to refer just only to the webpage. Regarding the first item, per the discussion at the authority meetings on November 18th, December 18th, 2015, February 17th, April 20th, 2016, the authority ultimately voted to afford airport tenants the same shortened over-the-counter permit treatment that people off the airport receive, and in that regard wanted a permanent form of making that policy change by amending Title 19. Currently, Title 19 requires that all plans need to be approved and plans stamped prior to any construction. Using that process may well require delays measured in months for small projects. The desired change can be implemented via the following changes to Title 19, which include an exception to the prior approval of the authority for those projects that fit the over-the-counter approval project. I'm not going to go through all of these requirements that require permits or do not require permit because it's long and drawn out. However, I will be happy to answer questions for the knowledge that I do have with some of those requirements. But this is basically a reading, and once approved by the authority, it then moves to the Board of Supervisors, where they will go through two readings at their Board of Supervisors meetings, and then it will be incorporated into the change in Title 19 once approved. Do you have any questions?
I think we're finally going to get good at this probably about the time I leave. I think that before we take those questions, is there any public comment on this item? Okay, so hearing none, then actually we would need a motion and then open discussion from that.
I move to approve amendment of Carson City Municipal Code Sections 19.02.020.340 and 19.02.020.200 to incorporate the Carson City Building Department counter permit procedures into the Airport Authority construction approval process and to correct the reference to the landing pattern diagrams to refer to the authority webpage respectively, and direct Airport Council to proceed with the city to make these proposed amendments as they're presented here today.
Thank you, Member White. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Member Law. Okay, discussion and questions. Member Posick.
I'm just curious. We don't have to do two readings. It's just the Board of Supes that has to do that?
Right. We're not changing the ordinance. We're just sending our suggestion to the Board of Supervisors for them to consider.
And I know that you gentlemen know the process from there, but that is really what we're doing tonight, is wrapping up the things that we agreed before on language and saying staff, ship them over to Supes, and then Supes will either approve or disapprove that, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Any other questions or discussion on this matter? Then we'd be in need of a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, if there be any? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. And I think we'll have, when Mr. Takis returns, if you could, Manager Rowe, let him know that we move forward and get that over to supervisors for the next appropriate meeting.
I will do that.
Thank you. Item number two for tonight for possible action to approve Pier 28 LLC Class 2 FBO status. Goodness, the way that this came through. Sorry. Class 2 FBO status located at 2600 East College Parkway, Suite 101, and the Carson City Air and at the Carson City Airport to conduct its flight school operations. And that, let's see, would be Mr. Brian Bowell. And if you could come on up and sign into the register and state your name for the record. Welcome.
Excuse me, but I believe that...
Okay. Oh, that's right, of course. Thank you. And let the minutes show that Member Posick is stepping down from the dais, recusing himself from this item. Good. Not so fast.
And my apologies for misspelling Mr. Vowell's name. It's V-O-W-E-L-L.
Yes, I saw that. And apologies, Mr. Vowell.
V.
V. Yeah, that's a better one.
For the record, my name is Brian Vowell with a V. I'm the owner of Pier 28. We're an existing company. It's about 5 years old. We do photography and transportation cameras. A couple of months ago, we purchased Carson Aviation Adventures, which is an existing licensee on the airport. We now own that as a wholly owned subsidiary, and we're doing business, we'd like to be doing business at 2500 College. So that was another error in the minutes. 2500 is the old El Arrow building. We've executed a new lease with them, and that's currently in effect. And we have switched over all of the documentation for the Part 141 training operations. So the FAA has been notified. Everything's all good on that. The certificate's still intact, still in full force. We aren't making any changes to the operations or anything like that in terms of the personnel or the airplanes or what we're doing. We're still doing flight training. We've added a few aircraft, and we have an insurance policy that's currently in effect that the documents that we submitted showed $1 million in coverage, but we actually do have $2 million, and I sent a note over to the insurance broker this morning to get a new COI. We're waiting on that, but as far as I can tell, we've gone through the checklist in Title 19 and checked all the boxes.
No, thank you for that, and I will confirm that indeed the application, Mr. Val and Pier 28, does accurately reflect 2500 East College Parkway. That was an error in the agenda. Apologies for that. As Mr. Val said, their review of the checklist seems to show their application in order. Similarly, Council Takis has conducted a review and found that he agreed. The one item that you already mentioned was the certificate of insurance for $2 million in coverage. So any action we take tonight for approval of this application, I think we would just say, pending confirmation of the insurance coverage.
As soon as I've got it, Mr. Rowe will have it.
Great. Questions for Mr. Bell, Member Law.
I also understand that you're supposed to have a correction on the insured as Carson City Airport Authority plus Carson City itself.
That's right. I sent an email to the broker requesting those changes. We have had the $2 million in cover since the very first day, but for some reason they rushed the COI out and they wrote it up as one instead of two. They also originally, when they wrote it, they said Las Vegas, Nevada, so there were a couple of problems with it.
Any other questions for Mr. Val? Member Stotts. Oh, sorry, I was behind my...
Yeah, this isn't particularly relevant to your application, but I'm just curious, what is the provenance of the name of your LLC, Pure 28?
You're going to laugh. The day that we started the business, we couldn't come up with a name. We went to the website to buy a name, and it had a bunch of them going by on a ticker, and we said, that's the one that sounds good. It was short and easy to remember, and it kind of sticks in people's head. That's all it is. There's actually no meaning other than that was available that day, and that's what we bought.
A sort of nautical theme. Great. Okay. And so in this transfer, again, just because it's of interest to the body and I think the public, if I heard you correctly, really the same scope of business that Carson Aviation Adventures has operated under, but maybe even increasing in scale a little bit?
Absolutely. So Adventures was the flight training arm of services, and we still have the certificate for the scenic flights. We're ramping up. We've done some agreements with some other flight schools. We're going to be bringing in additional pilots for additional training from Phoenix and from the Bay Area. We've purchased a couple extra airplanes, so the total fleet size right now is 8. And they're trying to be a full-service flight training academy from zero time all the way up to airline pilot.
Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations on the success. You know, this is what the industry needs more of as opposed to going the other way. So that's excellent.
Great.
Okay, so are there any other questions from the authority for Mr. Vowell? Are there any questions or comments from the public? Sure, you can. Okay, in that case, we'd be in need of a motion.
I have a proposal. I move that I move that we approve the FBO application of Brian Vowell to own and operate Carson Aviation Adventures, doing business as Carson Aviation Academy, LLC.
That's a motion from Member Stotz. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second from Member Shirk. Any further discussion or questions on the matter? Yes.
Were we supposed to have a conditional approval?
Yes, we were. Thank you for that. Back to, let me make propose an amendment to the motion. Take Member Stott's motion to approve the FBO application of Brian Vowell to own and operate Carson Aviation Adventures, DBA Carson Aviation Academy, LLC, provisioned on their providing a certificate of insurance for $2 million. Member Rowe, or Measure Rowe.
I'm sorry, this is for Pier 28.
You're correct. Why do we have this written incorrectly? I feel like we've got the wrong document tonight. I will propose an amendment to Member Stott's motion to approve the FBO application of Pier 28 and its owner, Brian Vowell, to operate Carson Aviation Adventures, LLC, doing business as Carson Aviation Academy, as a wholly owned subsidiary of Pier 28, provisioned on their providing a certificate of insurance showing $2 million in coverage and the appropriate naming of the Carson City Airport Authority and Carson City, in the city of Carson City, as named insurers. And I would ask Member Stotz to accept that amendment.
Oh, yes, I accept that amendment.
And Member Shirk does as well. Okay, so the motion as amended stands, and do we have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, if there be any? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously, and as clumsy as that was, Brian Vowell, congratulations, and thank you for your success on the airport, and I wish you, and we wish you, good luck going forward. Thank you. And let the minute show that Member Posick is returning to the dais at this time. item number three tonight is a report to the airport authority of the status of the cell tower tenants, including current lease rates and terms of lease or terms of use. And I'll turn to Member White, who requested the item, to brief us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I requested this item with the knowledge that this board is turning over quite quickly in recent history, and I thought it would be appropriate, considering some of the issues around the cell tower, that we get a full and complete report of what's going on there so that as this board moves forward, we don't surprise the new members, is basically what this is all about. So I'll leave that to Tim to give you the intricate details.
Okay, currently we have three cell providers on the tower. However, that's about to change. I will go through the two most current and the most viable of the tower leases, beginning with AT&T. AT&T lease was initially signed 9/15/09 with initial term of 5 years, automatically renewable at the end of each five-year period. All tower leases are the same. A CPI increase is added every 2 years. The current term expires in 2019. AT&T will most likely not terminate the lease anytime soon, mainly because of the improvements they have added to the site. They have an improved antenna array and emergency generator that they installed. They've sunk a lot of money into this site, as did Verizon. The initial lease rate for AT&T was $1,000 per month or $12,000 per year. The current lease rate is $1,210 and $7 per month, with receiving $14,520.84 per year. Verizon, the lease was initiated 12/17/08 with an initial term of 5 years, also automatically renewable at the end of each five-year period. The current extension ends in 2018. It is also doubtful that Verizon will terminate its lease for the same reasons as AT&T. They also have upgraded their site and are in the process, as we speak, of adding an emergency generator. The initial lease rate for Verizon was $1,500 per month, $18,000 per year. The current lease rate is $1,791.08 per month, and the airport's receiving $21,492.96 per year. And Clearwire Communications, also now owned by Sprint, the lease was canceled as of July 11th of this month. All equipment, including antennas, coax, and cabinetry, have been removed and decommissioned back in May. The cancellation of the Clearwire lease is a reduction in revenue of $13,068 per year. Cricket Communications. On October 22, 2015, ARQ, a cell tower management company for Cricket, notified the airport that they were canceling their lease effective December 22, 2015. There's a lot of back and forth regarding the settlement with the airport and what to do with the equipment on the tower. And on October 21, 2015, the authority voted to reject the offer from ARQ to leave behind any equipment, instructing them to remove all equipment once the lease expired. However, on January 1st, 2016, the airport received its monthly lease payment from AT&T. They're paying both the AT&T lease and the Cricket lease. I didn't know what to think about that because none of the equipment had been removed either. And I was not notified, and let me go back up here. They are current with their lease payments of $1,174.83 per month and receiving $14,079.96 per year. And even they are current for July. On July 7th, 2016, Redco, a subcontractor for Integra, a subcontractor for AT&T Cricket, arrived and began dismantling the Cricket antennas, coax, and cabinetry, and I wasn't even notified that they were on site. I just happened to see them at the tower, wondering, who are these people? After finding out who they were and what they were doing, they gave me a contact number at Integra of a Mr. Falconer, and he contacted AT&T to basically let them know that, you know, what was, we were lacking a formal cancellation. Because in the lease, if it actually ended in on December 22nd, they only had 120 days to remove all equipment, and nothing was touched. So they are now, they've removed the equipment. It is, the tower is clear of all their equipment. They had their equipment only on a flush-mounted mount or foundation in the dirt, so there really wasn't anything. They did remove the electrical conduit that fed the cabinetry, so it is clear. Mr. Falconer did contact AT&T, and they are, as we speak again, going to send me a notice of cancellation. Until I receive that, and until the cancellation becomes effective, I expect that we will receive the normal lease rate. The cancellation of the Cricket lease reduces the airport's revenue another $14,079.96 per year. And that's all I have for that, other than the fact that we will be seeking other vendors or cell tower operators to see if we can get some more use out of that tower.
So to date, we have not received a notice of cancellation?
No, we have not.
Okay. Are there any other radio towers, internet dishes, anything else on there besides cell phone stuff?
No, it's all cell phone stuff. There is a microwave transmitter, mm-hmm. but that's part of Verizon's tree, okay. as far as I know.
That's... So a question that I have, I think you've covered this, but to clarify, the original notice of cancellation that Cricket/AT&T, and I think just for clarity, we'll mention here that the reference to AT&T here is not the same as the AT&T at the top of the report. AT&T does own Cricket, though. But that cancellation letter, canceling effective December 22nd, is basically null and void, is the way you see it, and that the rents will be due for 120 days following whenever you do get a new notice of cancellation.
That is correct. Okay. I did confer with counsel, and he agreed and decided that we expect to be paid on
sure.
time.
Yeah, and I think that the reinforcing fact there was that after their notice of cancellation and even 120 days later, they hadn't taken their stuff out. Okay. Member Law?
Tim, also, when you and I were talking, when you had noticed that they were removing that, there was some discussion as to whether they had to have a building permit, a city building permit, to remove some of that stuff. Was that ever obtained? Do we have any liability for the removal?
We do not. They had all the appropriate permits.
I suppose if we're on the topic, I know that with the... is it the Clearwire Sprint removal? Is that where they have still an outstanding request for us to give them a release and that we've said no? I think they were looking for a release and indemnification or whatnot, that you know, they are released from all liability for contamination of the site, blah, blah, blah. It was counsel's advice that we not agree to that.
That's correct. No release has ever been signed. However, I did pretty much demand that a person from Clearwire or Sprint come to the site. He did several days later, and we inspected the site. All equipment has been removed. Cabinetry is removed. They had their equipment not mounted in the ground but on a concrete slab that was on top of the ground also, and it also has been removed, as well as all electrical conduits.
The slab was removed too? The slab was removed also?
That's correct.
It's interesting how, you know, you kind of say, well, that's sort of strange, right? You know, wouldn't it be useful for someone else? But I think as we've been through this so many times, you know, if you want someone to do a complete remediation, you know, you want them to take absolutely everything. So. When, just as a point of curiosity, not to belabor this, but when you mentioned them taking out the electrical conduit, I believe in the Cricket case, or maybe it was the Clearwire case, you know, I have never really gotten an up-close and personal tour of the tower there, but do the electrical conduits go from a central metering bank to the individual pad sites? Is it that length of conduit that they refer to? Like, is there a master run in from the street from Sierra Pacific, NV Energy, and then there are breakouts to each site?
I believe that's exactly how it works. Their conduit went to a place in the center of the driveway, which is collapsing, and I told them that they need to correct that before I will let anything go. Now, I don't know if that junction fed Clearwire or Cricket or both or all of them. I just don't know that. That's a good question to find out. I'll write that down.
Yeah, I think as we go through this, that's probably a good thing to get a handle on from just an engineering standpoint, is what is the sort of topology of that? You know, where do the conduits go, whether that's feeding the backhaul of the data communications or whether it's the electricity, just to understand, because you just pointed out beautifully, Tim, you know, they went and pulled that out. Well, you know, if pulling it out, you know, to what point, and does that, you know, sometimes mean digging up our pavement? Does it mean, you know, yeah.
So fortunately, it's all rocks and dirt.
Great. Any other questions on this item for Manager Rowe or Treasurer White?
No.
Okay. No action was asked for on this one, and none needed. So that actually would conclude our public hearings for tonight. And then moving on to our non-action items. Item G, our airport engineer's report. Mr. Clegg.
Okay, well, the good news is that the FAA has announced the grant for the full amount that was requested, which includes the airport administration, the audit at the conclusion of the project, the construction management by Atkins. The Aegis survey was also included, as well as the reconstruction of the North Apron. So what that means when they announce that the grant is coming is that it's cleared Washington, D.C., and currently the Phoenix Airport's district office is writing up the grant offer, and as of last week, they thought it could be received by the airport as early as this week, but most likely next week. So in anticipation of that, we have scheduled a pre-construction meeting with Granite Construction for Friday, so that when that grant is received, we can start working as soon as we get all of the contract documents put together. So that's all I have, but it's very good news.
Good news indeed. And with that in mind, and your meeting scheduled for the 22nd on Friday, what just ballpark does that sound like in terms of mobilization date?
Well, assuming that we get the grant next week, it usually takes about a week for that to be processed. So I would think that in a couple of weeks we might be starting.
Excellent. Well, I think that as, you know, we kind of, you speak to some of the things to do to appropriately, you know, get things tied up for the quickest start possible. One of those, of course, Knowing that this project has, you know, phase one, 1A, 2, 3, and that there definitely is some real ballet to do in terms of tenant access. You know, we know the drill well. I think scheduling the airport tenant meetings, you know, I think has been the practice to make sure that the documentation, the briefings, the awareness of who can do what and can't do what between when and when, and kind of updating that as we go. It's time to launch that. And Manager Rowe, I think I see you leaning forward. We've done this before, but do you have a comment maybe on that?
Well, I've invited the tenants. I wasn't able to get in touch with Jim Wickersham, but Steve Lewis and I believe John Kelly with Mountain West will be at the office on Friday for the briefing, just to let them know what we're planning to do with the phases. So we think we might be able to knock it out a little faster than possible. Jim can brief that, but we hope that the tenants will be in favor of us proceeding, and you're invited also.
Yeah, and I heard the whisper here, and you read my mind. At what time on the 22nd and where?
It's 9 o'clock in the terminal building. And, Tim, I've got a question. Is Steve Lewis representing Cubics?
Yes.
Perfect.
Okay, well, we will be there as well, and, yeah, Jerry or I will be there. Great. Well, that is good news indeed, and thank you very much, Mr. Clegg. Any other questions for the engineer? All right. That brings us to item number 8, Airport Manager's Report.
As it was briefed earlier, I'm going to go through this quickly. Our annual open house attendance was lower than expected due to the high winds. Fly-in didn't happen because of weather in the mountains, but we had a respectable turnout, but we guessed approximately 2,000 people. All of the vendors made a little bit of money. Nobody got rich, of course, but we had some good programs, some that we've never had before. One charter college had a learning experience about aviation in the Sterling Hangar, as well as the Home Depot kids. It's good we put them inside because they were very busy building wooden helicopters. It was a, like I said, respectable show, but we had a lot of competition in town, so we're going to have to rethink our competition for next year and see if we're going to need to reschedule to a different weekend. So we'll work on that. And as far as budget's concerned, we barely scraped the $5,000 budget for the open house simply because we had some contributors who helped us out a lot with the expenses of the open house. We have not received our personal property tax, real and personal property tax revenue yet. We're hopeful that it will be here very soon. We are expecting to receive $207,953.17 for FY15-16. All delinquent taxes that were due in February have been paid except for $882.13, so we're actually ahead of the game somewhat from last year. Just any questions on those two items?
Just maybe quickly on the item you just mentioned, the revenue inbound. So that is basically, obviously, our financial statements that we have in front of us are through fiscal year end. They're accrual basis, so we know what the number is. This is actually the cash flow coming to fill in that expected number, and that would be the final tying out payment that we'd expect from the city.
That's correct.
Thanks.
Okay.
What is that final payment? I didn't look at the document you sent. What is the final payment that we're going to receive?
$207,953.17. Okay, we had a pretty big inspection on starting on Monday, July 11th, by Robert Y. Lee, the compliance inspector with the FAA of the ADO San Francisco. The inspection went very well for us. He did find one hangar that was partially not in compliance. He had a lot of, the gentleman had a lot of boxes in front of an airplane, and you can't inhibit the movement of an aircraft under the FAA's hangar policies. So, but other than that, the other hangars that he looked at, all were in compliance. There was one inspection that that Mr. Lee received a complaint by Jerry Vaccaro regarding non-aeronautical use. I made arrangements with Wes Avendroth to inspect that hangar. We did, and Mr. Avendroth does have an aircraft, and he has cars in there and things like that, but the aircraft was not inhibited for movement, and Mr. Lee seemed satisfied with the hangar. Outside of that, he saw no major compliance issues. He did have several recommendations, which council has briefed, and I've actually incorporated a lot of the points that Steve Takis incorporated into my brief. That's a lot of things going around by plagiarism, and this is exactly what this is. So there are six recommendations that Robert Lee made for us. Many of these are going to be incorporated into his final report. Number one is to update the ALP to show the through-the-fence access points. Jim Clegg is aware of that, and we will be looking to either incorporate that soon or as part of the master plan. Also, we're going to update the airport layout plan to show the future through the fence per the John D. Winters deed. We're going to develop an inventory showing the number of hangars along with the owners, occupants of each hangar, and their contact information. I'll go to that after I'm finished with this. Start a hangar use program which specifies allowed uses for hangars. Information is currently being received from other airports with hangar use programs. Having said that, I have received some hangar use policies. Airport Council received one from Prescott. I received a very informative one from Centennial Airport in Denver. They've got a really good hangar use program, and we're going to be looking at that, hopefully incorporating them, all of these into something that we can use to present to the authority at some point in the near future. We believe that Title 19 will have to be changed regarding these issues. Mr. Lee also requested we adopt minimum standards of operations for all FBOs that contain such requirements as what actions are allowed in the hangars, insurance levels, etc. We really do have that, but this way it will spell it out. The biggie is the annual inspections of hangars for compliance with FAA and Title 19 requirements to include the fire marshal to ensure the fire codes are being met for storage of fuel, etc. He also mentioned that we should coordinate with the building department to make sure there are no code violations, and this is something that we will have to discuss at a future authority meeting. The final report from Robert Lee will be submitted in early September. I am currently compiling information to submit a report to the authority for possible action to aid in the development of a hangar use policy and a hangar inspection program. This will not be ready until September, and I want to incorporate what Mr. Lee reports to us. That will enable me to add whatever I need to add to that report. If it's not finished, his report is not submitted and finished by the September meeting, then it will be incorporated into the October meeting. I will also add whatever recommendations we can do.
That might be a good pause point. if there are questions on this. You know, I think that what you said is right. This gives us some early view of some of the things that are recommendations. I think some of those probably are more straightforward and easier to incorporate. Some we might not, you know, maybe see it the same way as an authority. And as you said, we'll have the opportunity to look at that, I think, when the final report comes out. And probably for some of these, it is worthwhile to, you know, to start moving. You know, some of them are easy, like potentially updating the ALP. Again, do you want to do this off-cycle? I think one of the things we'll want to get a sense of is which of these recommendations are strong recommendations versus maybe a good idea to consider. You know, so, you know, that's something we can continue to look at. A question I had was the second one, update the ALP to show the future through the fence on the John D. Winter deed. The great, you know, the great unknown for the past umpteen years has been, okay, and where shall that be? Do we know yet? I mean, have the new owners, have we had any conversation that plots that yet, or are we even close?
I don't believe there's been any discussion on that. I heard once not long ago that the property was in escrow, but I have not heard anything to update that. So I really don't know what's being planned.
As far as showing that, I don't think we can show it because it's undefined. But I think that we could just add a note
somewhere here.
Yeah, in explain what the situation is. But you know, I kind of agree with the Phoenix ADO. We can make that change to the ALP, both changes that were suggested, but we wouldn't be submitting the ALP to the FAA until we go through the master plan process. So, you know, we can do that, but I don't know if anyone's going to see it.
No, that's a good point, and, you know, let's consider that if that would be sort of off-cycle cost, you know, as opposed to doing things when, you know, when someone would see it. Maybe my only other comment at this time, just to kind of food for thought, is whether we're talking about the hangar use program or the FBO minimum standards. I think that, you know, and it's mentioned here in your report or in Steve's takes his report, at least, on the minimum standards of operation. You know, well, we explained that those are set by the leases. That triggered a thought in my mind. In both of these cases, you know, how do you create a, let's say, hangar use program that's anything other than advisory, right? So we can say, look, the FAA from time to time comes by and inspects. If you follow our nice, tidy hangar use policy, we can assure you that you will be in the clear. This represents best practices as we've interpreted the latest rulemaking. I don't know if we can force anyone to do anything that's more restrictive than the leases that they're under, and I would say that similarly for the FBOs and minimum standards of operation. You know, I think this might only be advisory in nature. You know, I don't think it changes what we might put together and move forward as a program. We would probably want to contemplate as this authority at a future date saying whether any future leases might want to incorporate new language. Again, a change to Title 19, that might say something. But I just think we also have to be aware that there are leases that people are under that don't have those things. So we'd have to understand that landscape. Comments or questions?
Just one Member question. In general, what was the attitude and how did the tenants receive this FAA inspection? Were they open, happy, disgruntled?
The gentleman with the boxes in front of his airplane seemed put out, but most others were friendly. Wes Abendroth, he was here a little while ago, he seemed happy to show the Robert Lee around. I opened up my hangar, showed him around. Some others did also. So he seemed very satisfied. He was surprised that there weren't a lot of people working in or around their hangars while he was there on Monday, but we took a few trips around and he found a few people, and he was for the most part satisfied and he was happy with what he was seeing.
I just want to add, I was present when he inspected that one hangar with the disgruntled tenant, and the problem was is the door was only partially open and he was like peeking around. This guy had no idea who was looking through the door. You know, he may have felt like it was a potential robbery or something. But so, in a way, I don't disagree with the tenant. You know, because there was no announcement until after he came out asking what we're doing. And so he was caught off guard and not really notified.
Well, that issue of inspection, you know, is one we won't, you know, I mean, there'll be, I think, time to get into this at length, but, you know, is one that I think I'm certainly sensitive to, especially as, in our case, we have oftentimes, you know, and almost exclusively, we have privately owned hangars on leased airport land. Well, okay, you know, this was not a scenario where the FAA man was, you know, saying, I demand entry and inspection to this. And that wasn't, I don't think that's the rules that they were operating under. That wasn't the purpose. I don't think that there is a place for the FAA to do that even. But as we contemplate down the road compliance with this recommendation of an annual hangar inspection, that may be one of those ones where we say, okay, well, you know, sure, you'd love for us to do this, that, and the other thing on your behalf of the federal government, but is that the right thing to do for our tenants? Is that something that we even have the authority to do? You know, this being Nevada, how will that be met? and good for us. So, you know, I think that, you know, I would say it's a successful outcome. You know, thank you, Tim, for, you know, for showing him around and presenting a good face, you as well, Mr. Clegg, and I know Mr. Takis was involved, and Linda, you were a big part of that one as well, so Vice Chairman Law, thanks as well. You know, I think we did well here, and I appreciate the fact that this seems to put to bed some of the lingering, you know, specters and rabble-rousing that we've heard about, you know, suspected incorrect use of hangars. You know, somebody who represents the purported issue of, you know, are we in non-compliance with our grant assurances? Well, the person who can speak to that came and visited us and felt that we were in good shape. So that feels good to me. Vice Chairman Law.
One thing I would mention when Mr. Lee was here and we were in our meeting was that there was a discussion about the difficulty because of our leases being independent from the airport authority itself and the transient nature of this area, how you would respond were you to have an inspection at a particular time and someone have a residence in Carson City and a residence in the Bay Area, and did they choose to pay their personal property taxes here or in California or Wyoming or wherever their other was, that if you chose a time and opened up and were able to inspect certain hangars, just because there was not an airplane in there would not necessarily show that you were in violation. And that's an important part to consider when you choose a date. You may choose a winter date and the person may winter in Arizona. You may choose a summer date and a person may summer somewhere else. So those kinds of things were discussed at that meeting, and he seemed open to the uniqueness of Carson City's airport and the kind of relationship we have between our leaseholders and the ultimate person in the hangar.
Oh, well said, and you know, I think it just puts a point on, you know, I can't imagine we're that unique in this regard, but sure, I think it puts a point on the fact that, you know, what is the real upshot of this? You know, why, what are we trying to do here? Obviously, there are a million and one reasons why there may not be an airplane in that hangar at any given point in time, and it doesn't speak to, you know, something necessarily going on.
They might be out flying.
They might be out flying. So, okie doke. Now, Tim, go on.
He didn't have a problem with it. Moving on, the AWAS was officially moved today to the Sterling hangar. It is not in operation just yet. We thought we'd have it finished by 5, and I've been checking periodically to via phone. We know the phone line was changed. It is working. However, the AWAS is not up and running yet, but I've got a NOTAM in effect, hopefully until just 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'm being optimistic. And the last item I have is the aircraft on the Northwest apron, the Albatrosses, S2s, and multiple and sundry other types, are going to be moving back to the area off of Bravo because that's a good hard stand for the aircraft to be parked on during construction. And then once that construction is complete and they're able to move back, we'll move them back. There was an issue that came up during construction. We are going to have to figure out a way logistically to handle it, and that is the air races. My idea right now is to close Taxiway Charlie to facilitate parking of aircraft. I'm coordinating with Mountain West North to figure out a way to make that work. We can't give them tie downs, and if the winds pick up, we just don't know how we're going to work that out yet. However, what aircraft we can store on the south side will be stored on the south side. We expect to have every spot on the south side taken. And as we should have these aircraft moved by midweek next week. Any other questions for me?
Member Stotts.
Taxiway Charlie is used by the helicopters that are flying out of El Aero for training. So we might let them know about it so they can go somewhere else to make noise while the air races are in progress.
That has been considered. And once we figure out what we're going to do with coordinating with Mountain West, Bristow Academy will have to do something different.
Yeah, this is the big head scratcher that you bring up, Tim. Just from past years, knowing that it changes each year, but the surge that we get during air race, and it seems to be, to me, just looking out the window, somewhat static. There's an influx, and they're kind of there for the week, and then they go. There's not a lot of operational uptick so much as coming, staying, and going. Do your gut feel is that surge that we typically see coming into the North Apron, do you think it can be predominantly accommodated down south if we're clever? I mean, and I don't know, are there extra spaces, really, when you look at the layout beyond the tie-downs where people can be tucked in if, you know, we have cooperation maybe from some of our tenants like Mr. Posick and Mr. Weaver and so forth? Are there places to kind of nest folks in, recognizing, as you said, that doesn't mean there'd be tie-downs?
Weaver has 4 tie-downs on his ramp in front of his hangar, and that is a possibility. I'll talk to Neil and see if he will accommodate. And I also talked to George Byard because he does have a nice apron. He doesn't normally like to have people there, but he's always been a good friend of the airport, so I might be able to talk him into helping us out if we need it. But I think we can accommodate a large number of aircraft on the south side. We have grouped the Cactus Air Force aircraft together where there's barely any room between them before, and we'll do that again. I've already talked to Tim Bruin at Cactus, and he's willing to stack them up so that we'll have more tie-down space. So I think we can make it work. The North Apron right now is the question. Like I said, we'll try to accommodate and make it possible to park airplanes on Charlie, but the only thing we can offer is chocks. But we'll make something work.
So I realize this is something we don't have great visibility of right now, Mr. Clegg, but gut feel, let's see, air races are September 12th through 19th. If we get going in the next couple of weeks, I mean, not remembering which the sequence is, what would we likely be at? I mean, would we be at the point in the construction where half of that would be available on the North Apron and half wouldn't? Would we be at the part where the throat would be closed and nothing is available? Do you have a sense?
Yeah. The easterly half of the apron would still be available.
So we might not be down to nothing.
Right, but there isn't many tie-downs on that side. That's the only drawback.
I know the Klickbahn hangar has a nice large ramp right in front of your hangar.
That's true. The concrete and the asphalt part, although that may be torn up as well.
We could drill some holes in that pavement.
There you go. That's right. Mr. Prosser. Or is that Mr. Stotts? Member Stotts.
But thanks for the compliment. That old dirt runway that is parallel to Taxiway Charlie might be a good place to stash planes if we were able to talk people into bringing their own tie downs, and a lot of people do. We'd have to cut the weeds down a bit, but there's a lot of space there on the dirt.
Well, we have mowed it. Our concern with the area, that area, is that although there's a hard-packed base, it is covered with softer dirt and sand. And our problem is if the winds are working the tie-downs, that it could cause the tires to work into the dirt. And that's one reason that we decided to move the larger aircraft, back up off of Bravo, just because we didn't want to have to dig them out of the softer dirt in the old emergency landing area. So, we've considered that. We just don't know if it's a good idea.
I'd like to add that that dirt runway, the southwesterly portion, is the staging area for the contractor. And that will also affect Taxiway Charlie. So we'll have to look at the plans on Friday. And, there's a possibility that Granite doesn't need the entire area that we've designated as the staging area. It's hard to say.
I think it would be a good idea to heads up Bristow for the Friday meeting as well, then, if that might affect them. And, they seem to be kind of operating at a good pace again. So that would be good to have them a heads up.
I'll give them a call also.
Member Sats?
The Bristow people do seem to be somewhat cooperative toward any vehicles or airplanes that are operating in the area. So I imagine they'll figure out a way to accommodate any changes. They seem to be flexible, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. If we don't have any other comments or questions for the manager, we'll move along. Legal counsel's not here tonight. I think we all received his briefing via email, and a lot of that was covered by the manager. Before we do slide on, though, one more question for the manager. Mr. Greedy's question about the speed bumps. I wasn't going to forget this. I know we were talking about an experiment and seeing if we could pick them off. Where are we on that?
Our equipment is just very inadequate to try to clean that off. However, we have talked to Granite about removing those, and so during the project, we'll work a deal. They've got the right kind of equipment that'll remove those, and we'll smooth that out.
Excellent. So that feels good. Phil?
I noticed that somebody's been nibbling away at one of them. Was that your efforts to see if you could get stuff out of it?
It was.
Great. Okay. Well, good. See, we got that one tied off as well. Item number J. Number J? Letter J. The Treasurer's Report, Treasurer White.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As of 6/31/2016, 6:30? Oh, okay. I didn't go to that class. Okay. We had a beginning balance of $42,415. We had deposits of $23,107. We spent $56,472. Leaves us a balance in the checkbook, $9,050. On hand, in the savings, we have $582,399. This report does represent end-of-the-year figures. Tim has assured me all in, all done. So as you'll see on the profit and loss, we were 196.5% over our budgeted income. We're $80,118 over with a $82,987 end balance. Despite some of the unexpected charges that came to us throughout the year, and indeed some fairly substantial overspending in some categories, we ended up being less than 1% overspent for what we actually budgeted. So everything looks in pretty good shape. One final comment is just reminding Tim that going forward, our reports will need to reflect the fuel issues becoming a proprietary and restricted fund.
They've already been established, and they will be added to the next year's budget.
Very good.
Budget versus actual.
One note that I would make, since I think I heard you say that you'd be getting together to set up or fiscal year 16-17 accounts and get that kicked off, I noted that I never did remember or learn exactly why, but all of the labor expense was piled into labor expense other in 6350 as opposed to 6351 salaries and payroll taxes, which is where the budget was, but ended up with zero accruals in this past fiscal year. I imagine that will get corrected. I still don't know why the coding ended up the way it did, but just a note to get that popped back up to 6351 if there wasn't some reason why it was in other.
I'll talk to Beth about that. I see it in the profit and loss, but I don't know about the actual budget versus actual, but we'll get it straightened out.
Great. Just a heads up on that. And one question, if we're on this, it came up a little earlier. Do you know, Tim, on line 6313 for insurance? So that's not health insurance, but for insurance. We ended up the year about 60% over budget on that line, $11,500 instead of $7,000. I was just wondering what caused that spike and if that's something that was anticipated when we did our new budget. I mean, I don't expect anyone to remember this offhand, but I just would call attention to it. Line 6313.
We might be looking at different numbers. I'm looking at the profit and loss.
Yep. So just under utilities on page one, we go on down office expenses, legal, secretarial, etc. 6313 insurance. Total spend of $11,581.55. Budget of $7,000. So just as a note, something as you sit down, maybe to
take a peek at.
I'll check that out. I'm not sure why it's reading that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, total spend in 2014-15 fiscal year is about $6,500. So not sure why it jumped up almost double this year. So maybe I would even ask just to double check that there wasn't capture, say, of this year's payment, you know, since it is close to double. But just a note as you sit down and look at that.
Or an incorrect entry, because it seems like a few months ago you had told me you'd made all the payments you needed to make.
Yeah, I did. I will look into see where we're at, and I'll send an email out.
Thanks. Other questions for the treasurer? Okay. Item K, report from authority members. Any other reports or items of interest from those of us up here? Vice Chairman Law.
The one thing I did want to report is Tim and I have talked on a couple occasions about the formulation of the employee and operations documents. I have gotten a hold of not only the city but some other folks and collected some information. I haven't heard back from some of the other people I contacted. I know that Tim has some input as well. I've been out of town and fighting a computer that crashed, so we will get together and go over some of that stuff and try to bring some things to the authority in the next month or so.
Great. Well, I thank you for your continued leadership on that and for working together to put together some recommendations for policy. And I know that's a lot of work that needs to be done between here and then, but it is good work, as we know. Treasurer White?
I have several, actually. I have been contacted a couple of times by a resident basically complaining about what's going on in the rock pile regarding dust. I've been by there a few times, and it appears that the water truck is working to keep the dust down, but maybe if Tim, you could talk with them, find out what their procedure is, and these complaints are generally afternoon complaints. I know when I go by there in the mornings, it's wet. So maybe they need to do it in the afternoon after it dries out. I don't know.
Well, we've come across this before, a similar complaint made a year or so ago by a gentleman who blamed the rock pile for making his car dusty. And like he was saying, it usually happens in the afternoon. And that's generally when the Nevada winds are blowing. And I can't say that all of that dust comes from the rock pile. It could come from anywhere on the airport. So I will talk to Cinderlight and see what they're doing with the water truck to ensure that they do water down the dust in the afternoons also.
Thank you. As you know, I have been talking to people about trying to develop this front 2.5 acres on the airport. These commercial real estate people are really in the same boat as the contractors I've spoken to. They are busy, not interested in spending a whole lot of time on anything for free. Several years ago, they might have. So I have been talking to one in particular. We have not got into the realm of any sort of costs. I thought that was outside what I was authorized to do. However, he has a little trouble getting developers to help create this RFP, because any developer interested in doing that doesn't want to create a conflict of interest and not be able to bid on the property. However, this company is willing, if we're willing, to create an RFP on a fee-based contract and throw this out to the contractors. I think that's attractive in that we don't have access to the developer world to float an RFP. So we're kind of going that anyway. However, we haven't budgeted for it, and we strictly have not talked about what the cost would be until I came back here to see if there's an appetite for looking at that as well. Without that, I don't see us having the ability to market this piece of property.
Just to comment on that, I completely agree with what the treasurer is saying about we don't have the skill set inherently to float what I think would be a responsible RFP that really takes into account all of the things, the unknown unknowns, you know, amongst us as we sit here. Knowing that, you know, we kind of have, if someone decides to say yes on this, kind of one shot to get it right and end up with the airport use that we'd like, mm-hmm. you know, and not leave anything on the table. But even before you get to that point, yeah, what do we know about how to market this to developers? So my comment would be that you're probably on the right track, that if we're going to do this and find success with it, we might need to be planful and talk about, as we go down the road, how do we budget for an appropriate amount of money? I don't even know what level of magnitude, order of magnitude we're talking about. You know, is this a $10,000 thing, a $20,000, you know, whatever. But we're probably going to have to spend money to make money, if you will.
Right.
You know, as you're indicating.
So, like I said, I didn't feel like I had authority to have that conversation. So I'm back here asking, can I have that conversation?
Before I get to Member Stotts, I guess my thought would be you're not taking any action. You're not committing us to anything. You're just getting information.
Still getting information.
So my feeling would be that, you know, you can go forward with that and continue to understand what this would look like, and I think that'll shape some future discussion. Member Stotts?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what kind of fees you're talking about, but it sounds like, considering the fact that we spent something like $46,000 to put water to an area and hope to to lure in some people to use it, like the name of the Center Triangle, It seems like whatever these fees would be would pale in comparison to that.
I hope so.
In order to attract some the bottom line revenue for the airport.
And again, I have not gone down that path. I have no idea what kind of money we're talking about.
Well, it seems that you have a lead at least, right?
Yes.
And that can get you some info. And I'd say continue to follow it up and report back in. Information is free.
Tim, please. On the next project I've been working on, the healthcare costs. As you know, you sent me out to see what we might be able to do with that. It has come to my attention that we can, if a interlocal agreement is put together, move our employees over to the city medical plan. I've looked the plans over. They appear relatively comparable. One substantial difference is how the premiums for the spouses are covered. So I think this is the direction we should go because it could potentially save us somewhere in the neighborhood of $20,000 a year. But there are some unknowns at this point. City manager has been actually out of the country until today. But we will have to have that interlocal agreement. The city may have to take over our payroll operations so that we comply with the ACA, Affordable Care Act. At this point, we're putting together a meeting with the city manager next week. There are other entities that the city already does this for, and so we'll look at what those MOUs are and kind of put some ideas together as if we want to do that. So that again is something I don't feel like I was authorized to do, so I'm asking for the authorization to have that conversation with the city manager.
So again, recognizing that we're not actioned on an item, but at the same time recognizing or believing that no board action is required on this for you to continue this conversation, I encourage you to do so. Continue to gather information. I think that's great to study the template, if you will, for how this is being done with other, is the term, quasi-governmental bodies here in Carson City. I think that a lot of the homework is probably already done. I'm encouraged to see the potential savings that could be realized, and I appreciate your taking the time and effort to go out and learn more about this. We've had a conversation checking in here and there, and I know you're making a lot of progress and learning a lot. I had a question in the sheet that you just handed out. What are we looking at here across these three HMO and POS options? It looks from a glance that there's just a difference of sort of subsidization on coverage, maybe a different, basically a different deductible.
Precisely. Okay. So the three categories you see there are the classified on the top, the unclassified in the middle, and then the police and sheriffs on the bottom. So obviously we wouldn't be considering the bottom one at all. Tim would fit into the unclassified, and Gary would fit into the top one there as classified. And then, of course, as you see, there's the two different styles of coverages. But if you look there, the city cost stays the same regardless of which they choose. So that, to me, is very interesting. That we would be able to see that there's a maximum cost. And then the cost varies depending on what the employees would choose. And then, of course, you see there on the bottom line of both of those categories, in the classified, the city covers 65% of dependent coverage, and in the unclassified, 50% of dependent coverage.
Dependent in this case being spouse or being child or family. Or,
correct.
Their use of dependent is a little interesting.
Right, but in our case, yep. As it stands today, it would just be two spouses.
Roger. Member Stotts, you have a question? Okay. No, thanks for the clarification on that. And so obviously there are, there as we go deeper, understanding. Sort of the flavors and the nuances of the different benefits and the HMO versus the POS or PPO type plan.
Right.
But you're right. You're good to point out that that might be a an option that we give the employee, given that the cost to the entity to the airport is the same, and we'll learn more about.
Right. So the conversations that I've had with human resources. There's no appetite to create an a la carte custom arrangement for the airport. This is what they do. If we want in, we're in.
Makes sense.
I need to back up to the front property development for just a moment. Tim, you were going to circulate that email that had several points that we thought were interesting and get feedback from tenants on the airport. Did you get any feedback at all from the tenants on the airport as to what their feelings are on that front property development?
No, just in casual speaking to a few folks, everybody's kind of in favor of doing something with that front development.
They don't.
I didn't do a formal email. I've just been busy with a lot of other things, but the people that I've talked to are all in favor of developing that area.
I think if you could go ahead and kick something out to all the tenants and get some input as to, I understand everybody's in favor of developing that front, but some input what they think might fit well. I think that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Member White. Any other reports from members? Well, I just want to, you know, comment again and thank you, Vice Chair Law and Treasurer White, for the reports you've given in this context, you know, taking on these special projects, as it were. You know, this is a pretty efficient and effective way for us to get some of these things moved forward, to do some research, and, you know, I think it's a great model, and thank you for dedicating the time to doing that. It's really appreciated. And it's exciting to see where we're going to be able to recognize, I think, some efficiency and savings. And, you know, always in the name of the business development, I certainly do hope that we can make some sort of progress on creating interest in developing the airport. This, you know, is, let's see, I don't want to kind of go backwards, but is this... we were having a little conversation before the meeting, Mr. Rowe and I, about progress on the terminal building, terminal building reconstruction, and I think that you were going to schedule a meeting, perhaps for us to get together with the contractor next week to explore some questions that have come up. And is that you're going to let me know what we're able to put together?
Yes, once we get some more information about. What they're discovering as far as the structural engineer that was hired by Mike Fritz, professional home developers. I basically insisted that we have a sit down with chairman, vice chairman, myself to discuss what they're finding and what they're looking at as far as, among other things, timeline, structure, and the possible hiring of an architect to design a roof. So the things that I'm hearing need to be clarified. So we'll try to sit down this next week early, hopefully, and discuss these things.
Yeah, and I don't know, Member, Vice Chair Law, what your availability is, but Monday or Tuesday would be ideal next week.
That's fine.
Because then I'm out on Wednesday. But yeah, I mean, we will tie this down. Obviously, we reviewed, issued an RFP, awarded a contract that was all-encompassing. And so we will certainly be diligent in strapping that down in its definition and reminding us that this was not, oh, and this and that and the other thing. So thank you very much for that, and just want to make sure that we got comment on that in there. If there are no other reports from members, item L, public comment, our final public comment period. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority may speak on items discussed on the agenda. Limited to 3 minutes. Do we have any public comment this time? Hearing none. Any advanced items for the next meeting's agenda?
Yeah, item four.
Member Posick. Yes, so... Member Posick mentions item number four. I think that I think that we will know as we go. We will not forget about item number four. I think you guys will discuss an approach to that. If we need to agendize anything for the next meeting, let me know. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Member Stotts?
I'm wondering if there's another way to go about this, evaluating the controllable budget items. Like, for instance, just agendize that and then discuss it openly during the meeting.
Right. And the one consideration that we want to be sensitive to is in an open meeting scenario, going through a line-to-line detailed description review on the legal aspects could end up disclosing information that is inappropriate and is, you know, typically not what we would say publicized, you know, is attorney-client privileged, and we want to be sensitive to that. So I think that there is certainly the opportunity for members to inspect and review those billings, as well as other items, and increase their knowledge. And then if there is sort of a appropriate and general conversation and potential action that we do want to take as an authority based on having increased our learning and knowledge in those areas, then I think it's absolutely correct to do. And we can have that opportunity to look at potential downward revisions to budget lines or other controls we'd like to put into place. But from the information gathering stage, I think that the best approach is to do that on a, on a independent member basis. And I think that is good with regard to maintaining privilege on some information.
Well, if I had some opinions about this, then would it not violate the law if I were just to whisper sweet nothings into Linda's ears about suggestions?
Sweet nothing?
Well, obviously, any conversation between authority members that does not violate our open meeting law are completely appropriate. So that's what I would say about that, Vice Chair Law.
I think once the Board of Supervisors makes a decision tomorrow and brings us back to a full authority number, we could include another member in the working group without causing problems.
That may be possible. Again, any conversations or inspection of those informations and records and conversation around them should be conducted in accordance with open meeting law. But you're on the right track, Vice Chair Law. And that should be stated is I think we're excited that the supervisors at their next meeting tomorrow should be providing us with a replacement for former Vice Chair Peterson and filling that seat. So we should be back to a full bench strength for our August meeting, which we'll look forward to. And I'm sure, that information will come. I don't know, Member Shirk, if you would, could you send an email out just confirming that once it happens, one way or the other? That would be great, and then we'll all know. Okay.
What I'll do is I'll send it to Tim, then he can forward it to everyone.
Yeah, good idea, best practice.
I'll actually be at the meeting tomorrow, so there won't be a problem with me doing that.
Perfect. And the manager will let us know who our new colleague is. Any other engineer Clegg?
Yeah, it's time to start up the ACIP process again. So I'll have an item on the agenda for discussion, possible action to move forward with the draft ACIP for 2018 through 2022.
Okay. If the manager would note that and make sure we get that into our draft agenda. And we might have, based on some of the conversations to come, obviously items with regard to the terminal building, with regard to other matters. But we will see. We have a month, 3 weeks at least. So if there are no other suggestions for items, I would make a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Or I would, I guess, hear one. And yes, Member White, motion to adjourn. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Well, Member Posick, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We are adjourned. Thanks very much, everyone.